day draws to an end and we watch you collect your belongings. We hide our emotions by painting smiles upon our faces. It's what we do best. Everything is fine.
Welcome to episode 6 of our podcast, Special School Lockdown. And this week I'm joined by Hannah O'Mara. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Roz.
So, Hannah, can you tell us a little bit about your role in the school?
I'm a member of the extended leadership team. I am the Key Stage 2 lead, and I'm also the PMLD lead for the school. Pupils that I teach use wheelchairs. They require daily physiotherapy. Many of them require enteral feeding, have quite complex epilepsy and other extremely complex healthcare needs.
So Hannah, for people listening that aren't au fait with the special school acronyms, PMLD, what does that mean?
It means profound and multiple learning difficulties.
Hannah, can you just talk to us a little bit more about your class and their needs and the type of curriculum that you have on offer for those Key Stage 2 students with those needs?
Of course. The students have very individualised curriculums. They are mainly therapy-based. That might include physiotherapy, rebound therapy, music therapy, hydrotherapy. There is a huge emphasis on the sensory within the class. The students, many of whom have very complex health needs and need lots of medical intervention during the day.
So obviously not something that's very easy to replicate in the family setting. When the coronavirus pandemic started and we had to make those very difficult decisions about closing the school to the vast majority of pupils, your students as a group were some of the first to really feel that impact, weren't they?
They really were. It was a very frightening time when all the government guidance started to be issued. I think it was around the 16th of March that they issued their guidance for vulnerable adults. And I remember talking to you about it and saying how concerned I was, because all of this guidance was really aimed at the adults out there who had very complex health needs, but there was nothing out there for our young people. I can remember just feeling overwhelmingly frightened for our young people and what was going to happen specifically to those children and young people who have complex health needs within our school.
Did you find that week that parents began to withdraw their children from school on their own, or do you think that parents had this sense that it was going to happen and so wanted them to get the benefits of the things that were available in school for as long as possible?
We had a mix, if I'm completely honest. We had parents who were very frightened, who asked me what I would do if it was my child in that position. I had parents who just withdrew them straight away because they felt that that was the safest thing to do. But I also had other parents who felt that they needed access to all of these therapies that we provide for as long as they possibly could, because they knew that school would be shutting and they wouldn't be able to access any of these things anymore. So it was a very mixed reaction. Everybody was very frightened, and for very different reasons, either because they felt that they weren't going to be able to access any of these therapies anymore, and also because of the risk of the COVID. It felt like it gained momentum so quickly that this virus that was on the horizon, that was seemed like it could be a threat, was suddenly here, and we needed to do something about it.
I think the thing that really worried me for those young people is that as part of their education, health and care plan, they have a lot of the therapies built into their provision, because those therapies have a very key role in maintaining their physical well-being, in maintaining also their mental health well-being as well. Mm-hmm. So there's that side of it. But in addition to that, you become such an integral part of their family's life as well, because you naturally, the communication between home and school has to be really good, because those young people aren't necessarily able to communicate clearly to the parents when they get home what their day has been like and what they've been doing. So that relationship between home and school is really important. And I think what was quite frightening on that final day, when we knew that we wouldn't see some of these children for months in many cases, what was that like for you to be saying goodbye to those young people and those communications with the family?
It was so hard. It was I think we found it incredibly emotional, not just me, my entire team, because like you say, we work so closely with these young people, and the relationships that we build with these parents are incredibly close. And a lot of the contact that we have is over the phone, and we speak to them quite often during the week, several phone calls a day. So the idea that they were going and that we didn't necessarily know when we were going to see them again was terrifying, especially when you're waving them off into the unknown and not knowing what was on the horizon. So that was difficult. And then came the job of trying to think of ways that we could give them all that they needed whilst they were at home, for however long that was. I mean, originally we thought maybe it was going to be to the end of the Easter break and then maybe the half term, but trying to come up with creative solutions to facilitate these therapies so that they could access them at home. And that is incredibly difficult when you're reliant on the space and the equipment and the professionals that you need to carry out these therapies. So it was a daunting task, but it was something that we thought, right, let's roll up our sleeves and let's think, how are we going to do this? How are we going to provide for these pupils while they're at home?
Can you just kind of explain to me what an in-school program might look like for one of your pupils?
Okay, so in a typical day, we'd come into school and we would reposition quite often. So a lot of our pupils who have physical needs, complex physical needs, need to be repositioned several times a day, whether that's in a standing frame or whether that's doing physio exercises on the floor. So there's lots of changes in position, which might happen at the beginning of the day. A lot of toileting, medical needs that need to be carried out as well. And then into that we have our communication sessions, which might involve sensory stories, story massage. It might be that we have eye gaze sessions first thing in the morning. We then go on into tack pack and other sensory activities, rebound therapy, hydrotherapy. Our days are made up of lots of little therapy sessions and communication sessions, all kind of knitted together into one bigger, lovely picture. And that fun and energy that's within the classroom. And that's what I was worried about, because when they're at home and they don't have that interaction with all those other people around them, all those different voices and different faces, and as well as the equipment, the staff are key to everything. And I'm incredibly lucky that the team that I work with are just, they are fabulous. And they have, another professional described it recently as sparkly eyes. They are sparkly eyed people, and they bring a magic with them to everything that they do. And the way that they engage those young people, and with the best one in the world I know as a mum, when you're at home with your own children, you can't always bring that magic and sparkle to educating your child at home. So it's I think hard, like I say, to replicate that.
What did a home learning program look like for one of your pupils? How did you connect with the family, the parents, and how did you try to reach out beyond school from your own home to theirs?
So initially, lots of phone calls to talk about what they needed, what they required. I think it really was kind of like a consultation to begin with, to talk to them about what they felt their child needed. And a lot of them said the overriding thing was that they felt they needed to be able to see us and to hear us. So as much as there were the physio needs and everything else, which we managed to get around by an amazing physiotherapist who was broadcasting live physio sessions on Facebook specifically for pupils who have PMLD. So we managed to get around that. There was another charity called Soundabout who were broadcasting a couple of music therapy sessions a week live so that the pupils could participate in that. But the big thing was that they wanted to be able to have us in the home. And so the way that we got around doing that was making lots and lots of videos for the pupils. I say lots and lots, there were lots and lots. You ask my staff, they had to record themselves a lot. So one of the things that our pupils love the most when they're at school is our music and movement sessions. So that became a weekly staple, that we would have a music and movement session where all my staff would contribute a song or a few songs towards the end of it. They got more brave and they would record themselves singing lots of different songs. And I would put that together into a video of us talking to the pupils and singing to the pupils. And that worked extremely well. We didn't use Zoom because the videos could be repeated. it's the repetition with our PMLD students, that they need repetition over a long period of time. Zoom sessions, by the time they've been and gone, they don't have that processing time. So the videos could be played over again and again and again. And we can see that in the number of views that we've had for a lot of the videos, that they have been played again and again and again. I'm sure the parents have loved it. But it is, it's that importance of repetition and learning through repetition. We taught parents how to carry out sensory stories. So I ended up sourcing lots of different sensory story materials and posting them out to parents, so they got a little package in the post, and videoed myself with my children carrying out these sensory stories so they knew how to do it. Story massages as well. A couple of members of staff volunteered to do that, and they performed story massages on their children when they cooperated, and if not, on their pet dogs, which were great to watch. But basically, I felt that the videos, they were the main key. They were how we, that was our breakthrough. That was when parents started to say, yes, this is working. Their children were just lighting up when they heard us and saw us on the screen. For many of our pupils, they have visual impairments, so the hearing was the important bit, that they could hear our voices, which is why I stipulated that everybody had to sing loudly on the video so that everybody could hear them. But that seemed to be the thing that really worked. And reading stories as well. I had lots of members of staff reading stories to the pupils. And we had lots of lovely videos posted on our tapestry page, on our tapestry journal. And we could see them watching these videos and just the delight in their faces. And for the parents, they said the important thing was they felt that they weren't forgetting us, because it's that maintenance, it's that remembering. And they didn't want, worst case scenario, for in 5-6 months time for them to return to school and to not remember us, or to not have that relationship that we've built up in some cases over many years, to gain that trust and that closeness. So it felt like we were stepping through that television set or that iPad into their front rooms, and in some small way we were leading sessions with them.
And how did you support the parents through the contact? Because I know that you had quite a lot of phone calls and emails and things with parents. How did that go?
I think the majority of the phone calls, people just need to talk. And we would chat about the pupils for a little while and how they were getting on and what they needed. But I think sometimes it was just to talk was the important part, because I don't think people realised how isolating it was for a lot of our parents. And for many of them, they're single parent families. They are suddenly their children's educators, and they are their healthcare professionals, and any support workers that they had coming in to help them have suddenly gone. It's just them and their child. And just being able to talk to somebody who understands at the end of the phone, who understands their child, who they can talk to, and just let it all go and say exactly what they need to say, I think was cathartic. It really helped them to process everything that was going on. Even though I didn't have the answers to a lot of it, sometimes it's just processing that and feeling that they weren't forgotten. And I think that is the big thing, that a lot of parents within the wider PMLD community felt that they had been forgotten. And just knowing that we're still there and we're there whenever they needed to talk, you know, just drop me an email and I'll give you a ring. So that was incredibly important for them to know that we were still there, that whilst their child wasn't in school, we're still, you know, it's like that beautiful song says, we're still their teachers, and that we're still there to support them through everything.
And also we're often the most constant people in a family's life over a period of time. And you are on that journey as their child grows and develops, and also on that journey as they discover more things about their child and their child's needs. So in lots of ways, the thing I gathered from the telephone conversations and the contact that you were having with families is that you continue to be that constant in their life, and that person that they trusted, which was amazing to see, but also a huge responsibility, I guess, too. The hard thing for me was the very group of students that most needed to be having physical access to school, because of the physical environment and what it offered their child, were the very same young people that were at most risk if they came to school potentially.
Yes.
And for me, the tricky decision was which risk
yes.
is higher.
Mm-hmm.
The risk of the and the dangers of them not accessing what they need and the impact that could have on them physically and mentally and on the family's capacity to keep going, to sustain themselves, weighted against that possibility that if they came into school, because many of those young people are more medically vulnerable, that should they somehow come into contact with the virus, we think could be much more dangerous than if it was another child without complex healthcare needs. But at the same time, I just didn't know because, and I don't think many people knew because it's a new virus and we don't really know how it responds. So we have looked, you know, sort of looking high and low for information and research and data on how it's affecting children. And definitely the indication is that it's not affected children as significantly as it's affected people who are older.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is all the guidance around shielding and that if you're medically vulnerable, then that kind of changes the scenario for you as well. So not really understanding what the impact would be there. I found that really difficult balance to strike. And it was knowing when it was all right to say, actually, we've got to the point where we don't really want this young person to be going without these things for much longer, that at the moment, the benefits of them being in school outweigh the risks. But they were often quite personal decisions for families to make too, weren't they?
They were. I mean, they're incredibly difficult decisions for anybody to make because these children, these young people, they are the centre of their parents' worlds. They're their most precious things in the entire world. And having to make that choice between the danger of the COVID and the danger of the deterioration that can occur when you don't have access to these therapies it's heartbreaking. And
Hannah, when you say deterioration, what do you mean?
I mean that a lot of our students, if they don't have their specific therapy programs, their body will start to deteriorate. So the deterioration can occur when we have some pupils who might have life-limiting conditions. Their physical progress, I mean, everybody thinks of physical process being a very, very linear thing, but it's not. And for a lot of our pupils, it's maintenance. It is maintaining those core strength skills. And if they don't have access to regular physiotherapy and hydrotherapy and a lot of the other things that we provide, their bodies will start to deteriorate and they will start to lose those core muscle strengths and skills that they've acquired over years. So the real dilemma is, do we protect our pupils against the risk of COVID? If they come into school, are we protecting them against that? Because they have these underlying health issues, some of them respiratory issues, heart issues. Or are we protecting them against the deterioration of their bodies? And that is a decision that I think would be difficult for any parent to make for their child. But there comes a point when you have to look at the here and the now and think, right, what can we do? What we want to do more than anything is to protect these young people and to give them everything that they need. But like you say, we don't have all of the information. The idea that one of these young people could contract COVID whilst they come into school to access these therapies is unthinkable. So it is, it's just a huge dilemma.
And I think for us, that's why, like so many people in the country, in the world, watching the infection rates and hoping that they come down is so important. Moving aside from the potential risk of infection, it's sort of drilled home to me more than anything that we are a community. The young people are at the centre of our community, but it is a learning community. It is a family community, and it is one where for potentially from the ages of 4 through to 19, we become the centre of a lot of families' life. And that's why the significance of us not being available to those families was very, very difficult for us to comprehend, because we were in such good contact with families. We were acutely aware of the journey that they were going on, of the highs and the lows, of for some families in many cases thriving and really enjoying the opportunity to be together as a group and stop and pause on a lot of those external demands that are placed on families. But over time, how even families with the most robust support networks began to find it difficult because almost everything that you have around you to support you is eroded. So whether that be grandparents that allow you some time to take your other children somewhere, or whether that be, you know, siblings or relatives that come by and are a favorite person to their child, all of those things were just kind of stripped away. And that might have been okay if school could have stayed, but school going too, it had the potential to become a very isolating time for our parents. And that's just something we've always worked against from the minute they arrive at the school to the day they leave. It's always something that we've tried to avoid happening by working with other service providers and so on. But again, you know, social workers weren't able to get as involved as they had been. And at one point, a lot of the respite just completely stopped for families. So it was a sense that everything that you might have in place, every structure that a family and a school has in place to support that family, was suddenly taken away. And I think that has the potential to have a huge impact on the family.
Some of the strongest families who band together and who seemingly could get through anything were exhausted. Absolutely exhausted and feeling it and trying to stay cheerful and positive for their other children, because at a time when it's all very frightening, you're trying to allay fears with your own children so that they don't pick up on those vibes. And like I say, parents who are incredibly strong were saying, oh, this is just too much, I'm so tired. Because like you say, we're a massive community, we're a big community, and some of the pupils I've taught for going on 5 years now, the changes in behaviour of these pupils who, you know, maybe reverting back to behaviours that they used to have years ago that are long since gone. And it's really hard to hear that they are so unhappy and that they're displaying some quite negative behaviours towards their parents because they are so frustrated, and a lot of them exhibiting many signs of anxiety. You wonder whether that was because, did they think school was ever going to happen again? Was that place, that safe place, gone? And not being able to understand why. Their world's been turned completely upside down. Their routine has gone. The people that they saw day in, day out, who they've formed these relationships with many over years, aren't there. And to not understand why and for it to be gone so suddenly.
Yeah, there's no transition to none. It was there.
There was none. It did. And, you know, by necessity, it just happened. But to not be able to explain that, and for those pupils not to be able to talk about why it's happened, the fact that all that nonverbal communication is a lot of it through, like I say, some quite challenging behaviour, some of it through lack of sleep, not being able to sleep, and incredibly unhappy, crying, and hearing those parents so low, and hearing those children in the background as well, those kids that you have day in, day out, hearing them in the background of telephone conversations unhappy was heartbreaking, because all you want to do is be there for them and to have them back with you. Just being able to give them that, the respite that school actually is, and for those pupils as well to be able to give them the change that they needed, because many of them shielded, not even being able to go out for walks, the same four walls every day. That's incredibly hard. And It was just a feeling of helplessness, just feeling that there wasn't enough that I could do. From day one, I was incredibly concerned as to how they would cope.
So as we move forward into the new term, we've got the privilege of being able to welcome more young people back. As a school, over this time, we've got used to some quite challenging ways of being able to provide an education whilst trying to keep everybody safer. So we've introduced PPE, including wearing face masks. We have very strict cleaning regime of staff cleaning between different activities. We've stopped the sharing of particular resources and made all of that a bit more personalised. We've got different entrances to the school. We've changed the way we use shared spaces so that we're very much aiming at keeping young people within a safe bubble, and then within that safe bubble, making the environment as clean and hygienic as possible to really limit the potential for further infection. So all of those steps have been taken so that we can feel that we have done everything possible to make the environment safe for those children to return to school.
I feel like we just need to do whatever we can to protect them. And that has been my overriding feeling since the beginning of this, since this was just in its infancy and we knew that it was happening, was just to protect them at all cost. And before they even left pre-lockdown, we were trying very, very hard, you know, lots of hand washing and making sure that everything was safe. And as much as we want to be able to go back to the way it was before, and for a lot of our pupils, it's incredibly hard because that positive touch is so important. It's crucial for pupils who have very complex learning difficulties. I had a parent who was talking to me the other day about perhaps teaching her child not to reach out and touch anymore. And I reassured her that that really wasn't something that she needed to worry about, because we will be protected, and we can't discourage our young people from communicating in the way that they've learnt to over the past few years, with huge leaps and bounds coming on, wanting to reach out and touch people and to communicate through touch. But the idea that you're so frightened that your child can contract this virus if they do, and it's incredibly hard. The way that we have been carrying out things during lockdown in school, it's like I've said before, it's just normal to us now, whatever normal is. It's what we do. And we'll continue doing that for as long as is necessary. So far, the children, young people that we've had in school have been able to access the things that we've needed them to. We've just adapted, and we will just constantly adapt, and we'll find different ways of doing things, and we'll overcome the hurdles as we reach them, whether that's, you know, individual packs, tack pack, you know, which we use, which is brushed against children's skins, just individual packs so that there's no cross-contamination, things that can be easily washed or wiped. It's just making those small changes, and they are just small changes in many instances. Things like rebound therapy, making sure that we clean the trampoline down with antibacterial spray afterwards in between each use, just little things that can make a huge difference. And they have become just a part of our everyday routine now. So whilst the idea of going back to the way we were before would be lovely, and we long for those days back again, we just need to do what's right for these pupils. And with them being some of the most vulnerable in the school, then we have to make these changes for now. And it'll just be an ongoing, you know, we'll risk assess as we go and see what needs to be changed. And hopefully things can change. But for the time being, we just need to keep them safe.
The only risk-free situation with relation to contracting the virus is that the school closes and the children don't come to school. And I think through everything we've discussed, we very quickly realised that just presented a lot more other risks.
Yes.
The risk of coming to school has potentially arrived at a scenario where that's something that we can consider in a way that feels safer than it has done before. But obviously, it doesn't eliminate risk. We're really looking forward to seeing some of those young people back in school.
Gosh, yes.
And putting back those programmes and that support, but is not to get carried away and to continue to be safe. And that, I guess, is the new world order, isn't it?
It is.
For everybody.
It's that new normality, isn't it? That this will become the new normal. And over the last couple of months or so that we've been wearing the PPE, that is now normal to us. And I was talking to a member of staff about it before we broke up, and we were saying it'll be strange when our faces are out again. Won't that be strange? Being barefaced in front of a child again, because it's so normal to us now. And I think most things, with enough time, will just become common practice, and it will be just what we do now. And it's getting those young people used to it. And they've already proven, the ones who have been in school, the resilience and how quickly they've gotten used to the way that we're doing things. I think for parents, it's as much as they want those young people back and they want to be accessing those things, there's still that fear. Parents are quite desperate to get the children back into school, but at the same time, utterly terrified at the prospect of it.
What strikes me about everything you're saying is that the young people that you work with really inspire you to find a way forward.
Yeah.
So even though it's really difficult and it isn't how it used to be, to try and recreate that happy, sensory, therapeutic environment, we put our creative thinking caps on and we look to find a way to do it. So it's not going to be the same, but it's not impossible. We can find a way.
It's not impossible at all. I mean, the curriculum itself is creative. It's a creative sensory curriculum. And like I say, I'm lucky to work with some very, very creative people. And we all just problem solve and we'll find ways around things. And like you say, it's that at the centre of everything, it's that fun, that engagement. That is what it means. It's all about that communication and that engagement and to get the pupils to engage through having fun and wanting to interact with us. And we'll find a way. It's along the journey. It's been highs and lows, and I've said this before that, you know, it's been the worst of times, but in many respects it's brought things out of us that we didn't know we had, and we've learnt new skills.
Definitely your creative YouTube channel. I would recommend anybody to go online and have a look at that is something to behold.
Yes, my video editing skills have developed greatly during lockdown. I mean, somebody asked me at the beginning of lockdown what my aims were, what would I like to have accomplished by the end? And I said I'd like to be able to play the ukulele. And I'd like to say that I haven't learned to play the ukulele, but I'm quite good at video editing now. So I'll settle for that. It's good.
That is good. And I think it's an interesting perspective as well, because obviously all schools for all learners have had to look at the way they use technology to reach out beyond the classroom into the family home to provide some stimulating learning opportunities. And that's no different for a teacher that has young people who have got the profound and multiple learning difficulties. But your use of technology has brought out the performer in you and all of your staff.
Yes, whether they liked it or not. No, by the end, they were all very much, there were a few reluctant people at the beginning who will put their hands up and say they weren't too keen. But by the end of it, I think the thing is when you see the reactions from those pupils and you see the looks of delight and the squeals of laughter and just that recognition of, it's one of my favourite people on the screen. How can you not fall in love with that process and go, right, okay, let's whack out the video camera and do another one? Because it's magic, and it is magical working with these children and just being able to see them, a glimpse into the home of you being there remotely is just wonderful. And to know that when they come back, they've been able to see and hear you this entire time and that you've been able to preserve those relationships that we've worked so hard to build. And it isn't easy to develop relationships. It's something that takes a lot of trust and a lot of time. And to know that we've still got that.
One thing that's common throughout is that home and school life, although they were connected, they were certainly fairly separate. Whereas one of the outcomes of the way we've had to reach out to families is there has been this sort of blurring, and we get that opportunity to see a little bit into those lives and their home lives, and parents have become more forthcoming, like you say, about sharing photos and videos of their children doing things at home, and that's allowed us to celebrate those achievements within the home. So in some ways the virus has kept us apart physically, but in many, many ways it brought us together.
Definitely.
In a kind of virtual and social way. And it's sort of proven that the building is really important, but it's the people, isn't it, that really do.
So right. Absolutely. It is.
Tie it together. Coronavirus has presented a new challenge, another battle, one that for many will just have felt like it has eroded the things they've built up over all those years.
Absolutely.
And at just the point where maybe for some of them they get that school placement that is beginning to make the difference, it's been snatched away again.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing as well, Roz, that so many parents have had to battle for so long. Like you say, whether it's for that diagnosis or for that new chair or just to be heard, to be heard sometimes. And I think this has it reaffirms that we are this big community, this big family, and that we want the best, the very, very best for all of our pupils. And we will find a way.
Like you've said, Hannah, we are still here and we will be really resourceful and really creative, and we will find a way.
We will.
We will find a way to keep doing what we do. But that doesn't happen without incredibly creative and resourceful people like teachers like yourself and the staff that work with you. So, and the parents working with us and letting us in. Thanks, Hannah.
Thank you, Roz.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm still proud of you. I am still here. I'm still your teacher.